In January of 2000, General Charles Krulak was delivering a message talking about integrity. And he said that integrity was really a martial type word that comes from the tradition of the ancient Roman army. He said during the time of the 12 Caesars, whenever a centurion was inspecting a legionnaire, he would stand over in front of one of those legionnaires, and that legionnaire would come to attention, and he'd slap his chest with his right fist, and he would hit his armor, and it would give off a distinctive sound, and he would say, "Integritas," and he would step over to the next one, "Integritas," over to the next one, "Integritas." Then something very interesting happened as Rome progressed through the centuries. About 400 years later, some of those soldiers that were in the Praetorian Guard and in the Imperial Guard felt that there needed to be a change, and so they pleaded with the Caesar, and they were allowed to say, "Caesar, hail Caesar," instead of "Integritas." And after they'd done that for a while, they actually asked if they could no longer wear those metal helmets and no longer wear that mail, that type of metal armor that they had, because it was uncomfortable and it was heavy. And of course, once the heart was unprotected and once the head was unprotected, they became very susceptible to attacks from arrows and those kind of things. And one of the generals toward the end of that time said this. He said, "When, because of negligence and laziness, parade ground drills were abandoned, the customary armor began to feel heavy, since the soldiers rarely, if ever, wore it. They asked the emperor to set aside the breastplates and the helmets, and they were often beaten by archers." He said, "Although there were many disasters which led to the loss of great cities, no one ever tried to restore the armor to the infantry. They took their armor off, and when the armor came off, so too came their integrity. In a matter of few years, before the legion rotted from within and was unable to hold the frontiers, the barbarians were at the gates." Well, it's very interesting that without integrity, a person loses their armor, their protection that guards the heart, that keeps them from defeat by the enemy. When you come to Daniel chapter 6, you see the value of integrity. In these first 9 verses, there's a principle here, and that is determined to obey the Lord in all things. When you look at Daniel's life and position, it's just amazing what this man accomplished in the time that he was in Babylon. He outlasted several kings, served for nearly 60 years faithfully. And at the end of 60 years, he was still growing strong, going strong, still outliving the other politicians that were involved there around him, and still a person whom God could give authority to. Look at Daniel 6, verse 1. "It seemed good to Darius." Now, this is after Nebuchadnezzar, and this is after Belshazzar. This is Daniel is now in his 80s, about 83 years old at this point. "It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they should be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them 3 commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss." In other words, there was money involved. "Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit. And the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom." Once that little bit of knowledge got out, it obviously led to a problem. Verse 4 says, "Then the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful, and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him." Amazing thing for a politician. "Then these men said, We shall not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever. All of the commissioners of the kingdom, that was a lie because Daniel wouldn't include, all of the commissioners of the kingdom and the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction. Daniel was a guy who had determined that he was going to obey the Lord in all things. And he was a man who had cultivated excellence in his professional life. And I think there's a great principle there for us too, that we need to cultivate excellence in our own professional lives. In those first three verses, it says that the king intended to make Daniel head of all of these other political officials. Well, you know what it's like in government today if you just follow along in the newspapers. Don't you get a little frustrated with politics? You know, if just day in and day out you follow the newspapers and you see this constant battle going on between the Democrats and the Republicans, and you see all of the shifting and everybody has got a spin on everything, and you never know whether you're getting the truth on anything, and it's just day after day after day of that. And no matter what the issue is, somebody can... Or how serious it is, whether we're trying to find the terrorists in Afghanistan or whether we're trying to understand what's going on in Iraq, there is no end of politicizing the issues. And eventually you're just frustrated. You don't know what the truth is, and you're kind of upset with that. Well, Daniel was in an atmosphere like that. And there was 120 other men that would like to have the position that the king was thinking about bestowing on him. So you can imagine what was going on. Here's this Jew who is about to be given the leadership of the government in what was then Iraq and Turkey and that whole area. And you can imagine the frustration when all of these career politicians were having to sit there and struggle with the idea of this Jewish guy being their leader. It reminds us of some things that go on in our own culture today. You know, integrity is so important, and Daniel had it. Think about what integrity means to you today. Somebody who has character, and his words and his actions match his beliefs. Whatever it is he believes, his words and actions can always be guaranteed to measure up to what he believes. That was Daniel. Some practical examples of this just comes from a book titled Forged by Fire. He says, do you want to be able to take your spouse's word to the bank? When a colleague says he or she will meet a deadline, do you want to be able to depend on it? When your children say they're going to a certain place when they leave home with friends, do you want to know with certainty that's exactly where they're headed? When you go to the drive-in deposit lane at your bank, does it put you at ease to know that you can trust the teller to deposit your money in your account? When the pastor teaches from the scripture, is it important to you for him to actually live what he preaches? When the surgeon says you need an operation, do you prefer to trust that the medical degree on the wall is legitimate? Integrity means a lot to us. It was very interesting. This unscrupulous salesman delivered a bid to a company. It was an engineering firm, and his company was bidding out some special jobs, and it was involved a lot of money. And so he met with the firm's representative. And the firm's representative received a phone call and said, excuse me for a minute, I'll leave you here, and I have to go take this phone call. And so on the desk, covered with a pop can, is the bid of another company. And this salesman looked at that and said, you know, if I knew what that bid was, I could make sure that we got this job. The only problem was that pop can was sitting where it covered just enough of the bid that he couldn't see what the bid really was. So he thought, okay, I'll just sneak this over here and take a peek at this thing. So he reached over and he lifted up that pop can, and lo and behold, the bottom had been cut out of it and it was full of BBs. And the minute he lifted it up, 1,000 BBs went everywhere, all over the desk, all over the floor, and you could hear ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And of course, the minute that happened, in walked the rep, because it was a test. And he just said, I'll just escort you right this way, sir, to the door. Integrity means a lot. Daniel had that integrity, and consequently, these commissioners were really looking for a way to get rid of him. They didn't know what to do. He not only maintained integrity in his professional life, but he maintained integrity in his personal life, in his relationship with his God. And therefore, he was almost unassailable. In verses 4 and 5, you see that they really struggled. They couldn't find any ground of accusation. They couldn't find any corruption. They could find no negligence. There was almost nothing that they could do. They realized that the only way they are ever going to accuse him is if they could find something wrong in his relationship with God. Dr. Charlie Dyer, who is the... Charlie and I graduated together from Dallas Seminary in 1977. He's the vice president of Moody Bible Institute in Chicago today, and a wonderful man, a wonderful administrator. He's written a book on integrity, the power of personal integrity. And he has a couple of poignant comments. Listen to this. He says, in 6 decades, a politician can make many friends and even more enemies. Enemies seething with jealousy, envy, anger, and resentment, emotions that gnaw at the insides of otherwise competent people and force them into irrational acts. He said, though in his 80s, Daniel was still leaving the competition in the dust. How do you stop a politician in his tracks? Look for the dirt. Uncover the skeletons in the closet. Search out the smoking gun. And then he asked some practical application questions. Listen to this. How well would you fare if a group of powerful individuals secretly decided to investigate you? They would spy on you at work, record the time you arrive each morning and the time you leave every night. Count the paper clips and the pens in your drawer to see if so much as one is missing. Follow you home to see where you stop along the way. Look through your mail and magazines to see what you're reading. Rifle through your trash to see what you're eating. Monitor your television to see what you're watching. Check your tax returns for irregularities and unreported income. Look through your bank records to verify all deposits and checks. In short, What would your file look like if a group of enemies pulled out all the stops and spared no expense to uncover the real you? How would you like to have your life on video replay for the congregation to see on Sunday mornings? Whoa. He says, the group of would-be antagonists reluctantly admitted 2 essential facts about Daniel's actions. First, they could find no evidence of corruption. Daniel had not taken bribes, had not skimmed the money from the public treasury for private gain, hadn't received any kickbacks, hadn't provided political favors to friends. There were no sins of commission that could be found in his life. Second, they could find no evidence of neglect. Daniel had not slacked off, cut corners, ignored his responsibilities. He had faithfully done those things he was asked to do to the best of his ability for 60 years. There were no sins of omission that could be found. That's integrity. And Daniel had it. And so these men set a trap, and of course they set up this, they appealed to the king's arrogance, and they said, look, how would you like to be worshipped for a month? King, why don't we just do that? And when people pray, they have to pray to you. He said, oh, that's a great idea. Let's do that. Not realizing the foolishness that he was getting himself into. So they set this trap for Daniel, thinking that, okay, let's just see what Daniel can do, and maybe we can trap him violating the laws of his God. Well, what do you think a man of integrity is going to do? He's going to go ahead and pray, isn't he? Look at verses 10 and 11. This is our second point today. Spend time with the Lord every day. Very simple, regardless of what your circumstances are. If you want integrity, just spend time with the Lord every day. That's two things. You speak to Him through prayer. He speaks to you through His Word. You apply what He says, you have integrity. So it says in verse 10, now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Notice that the windows were open there, folks. He wasn't trying to hide or cover this up or anything else. He just goes ahead and prays. Same thing as he's been doing three times a day. The man had a consistent devotional life. He never gave up on his relationship with God. That was of primary importance to him. He just kept speaking to God through prayer. I read something this week that was kind of humorous, but listen to this. Because there is so much false information about prayer out there. Most people think, like, if you're not praying, three or four hours a day, you're really deficient in your spiritual life. You ever feel convicted like that? Like, oh, I don't ever pray enough. And, if I really had prayer under control, I'd pray, an hour before I go to work, and I'd probably pray an hour at lunchtime, and I'd probably pray an hour sometime in the evening. Should you kneel down when you pray? Is that the appropriate way to pray? Should you bow down before the Lord? Should you lift up your hands, close your eyes? Should you bow your head and close your eyes, fold your hands? How do you do it? What's the right way to do it? Listen to this little poem. The proper way for a man to pray, says Deacon Lemuel Keyes, is the only proper attitude is down upon the knees. No, I should say the way to pray, says Reverend Dr. Wise, is standing straight with outstretched arms and wrapped and upturned eyes. Oh, no, 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 says Elmer Slow. Such posture is too proud. A man should pray with eyes fast closed and head contritely bowed. It seems to me his hands should be austerely clasped in front, both hands pointing toward the ground, says Reverend Dr. Blunt. Last year I fell in Hitchkin's well, head first, said Cyrus Brown. And both my heels were sticking up and my head was pointing down. And I made a prayer right then and there, the best prayer I ever prayed. The prayingest prayer I ever prayed was standing on my head. Well, taking prayer a little more seriously, there was a story that was emailed to me about a young university student. Her name was Diane. She was home for the summer, and she had gone to visit some friends and stayed a little longer than she should have. And so when it came time to go home, she had actually missed the last opportunity to get a ride home, so she had to walk home. It was a small town that was only a few blocks away, but she prayed and she asked God to keep her safe from harm and danger. As she was praying home, she reached an alley where she normally took a shortcut. And if you've ever been down on the UW campus walking around tonight, there's all kinds of alleys where you can take shortcuts over to the car ramp. And, those kind of opportunities are always there. And she started down that alley, and she saw a man at the far end of the alley kind of looking up her way. And she shot up a prayer to the Lord and asked the Lord for protection. And she just felt comforted and felt like almost like somebody was with her, but she just kept walking, and she walked right past that man. The next day, she got up and read the paper and discovered that a young woman was raped in that alley 20 minutes after she had walked through there. And being concerned, she went down to the police station and said, you know, I went through that alley and I saw a man there, and I might be able to identify him. So they had some suspects and that they got out, and they set up a lineup, and she identified the rapist. Once the rapist was confronted he went ahead and confessed that he was the one and that he had committed this crime. And the police said to her, Diane, is there anything we can do for you? And she said, well, I just have one question, and I'd really like to know this. I walked through that alley and that man saw me. Why didn't he bother me? So they went and asked the guy, and he said, because there were two strong-looking gentlemen walking with her. Well, I believe God answers prayer that way at times. He really does. Daniel was praying to God, and somebody ends up walking with him in the fire. And God answers prayer. He speak to God in prayer, He will answer you. He will uphold you. He will meet your needs. And then come to His Word and allow Him to speak to you and minister to your heart. That's what Daniel did. And then we go on in verse 12 and we see the results. And the point I have here is just this. Depend on God's character and promises in difficult circumstances. Integrity is not all that complicated. You determine to obey the Lord in all things. You spend time with Him every day, so you cultivate inner strength. And then when you get in difficult circumstances, you depend on His character and His promises. How He has spoken to you through His Word, the conversations you've had with Him in prayer, those things will sustain you and maintain your integrity and therefore your ability to serve Him. So in verses 12 through 17, we see the persecution. Look at this. Then they approached and they spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? The king answered and said, the statement is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which is not to be revoked. Then they answered and they spoke to the king. Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed, and he set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. There was a law in the Medes and the Persians. They believed in the infallibility of their leader. Therefore, if a king made a decree, it was considered to be an infallible decree. Therefore, it could not be changed, kind of like a pope. And so, this king was in a dilemma. He was doing everything that he could to try to figure out a way to get Daniel out of this, but there was nothing he could think of. Verse 15. Then these men came by agreement to the king, and they said to the king, recognize, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. Interesting wording in the New American Standard. Is that a statement of fact, or is that a prophecy from the lips of an unsaved pagan king? Something interesting to think about. A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet of the nobles so that nothing might be changed in regard to Daniel. Well, if you're a Christian, you're going to be persecuted. Daniel was persecuted because he was living the life in front of a bunch of pagans. The same thing will be true of you in your workplace. If you're a believer today, there will be times when you're persecuted for living the Christian life. I was thinking about that young gal out in Colorado, that Cassie Bernal. Remember her? That young fellow walked up to her with a gun and said, "Do you believe in God?" And she said, "Yes, I believe in Christ." Bang. And that was the end of her life right there. But that testimony went on, and hundreds around the country were led to Christ because of the courage of that young woman to face persecution and not cave in, to maintain her integrity in the face of incredible pressure. And there were others that did the same thing and died that day in Colorado. But they had integrity. Daniel was the kind of guy that openly identified with the Lord, and he was not going to change a thing. Going to let the chips fall where they may. If God wanted to take care... Now, don't miss it. Doc pointed something out to me the last time I preached on this, and he was right. You know, God doesn't promise to take everybody out of the fire or through the fire and bring them out. He may choose to take us home to glory. And that's a good thing, too. But God does promise that He will honor our integrity in either situation. He will deliver us from the situation that we are in, or He will deliver us home to glory. Either delivery is a good deal, right? If we maintain our integrity. And that's a good point. Well, what happens? Look at verse 18. Then the king went off to his palace, and he spent the night fasting. No entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. He loved Daniel. He realized what a fool he had been to set up some stupid decree where people would actually worship him. He realized he was trapped by these politicians, things politicians always seem to do. Anyways, the king arose at dawn and at the break of day and went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the mouth of the lions?" Look at the reference here to Daniel's integrity and to his relationship with God. Everybody knew about the quality of his relationship with God. He was not ashamed to wave the flag and say, "I am a believer." Then Daniel spoke to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him. And also toward you, O king, I have committed no crime." Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. The king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them and their children and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. You know why they killed them all? Because they know the law of retribution in those cultures. If you don't kill all the wives and you don't kill all the sons, sooner or later somebody in that family will rise up and kill you. So that's the way they did things politically in those days. They just killed them all. I read something that it got me into tears. Dr. Donald Campbell, in his book, his little commentary on Daniel, quotes an author who imaginatively pictured what it was like for Daniel to be there that night when he was cast in the lion's den. Listen to this. "As the guards closed the aperture and went their way, Daniel slid gradually to the floor of the den. The big lions that had come bounding from their caverns at the inflow of light all stopped suddenly short, as a steed reined up by a powerful hand on a bridle. The initial roars died away as they formed a solid phalanx and looked toward this man who stood in their den in easy reach. There was some snorting and a little whining, and then some of them turned around and went back to their caverns. Others of the great beasts yawned and lay down on the floor, but not one made a move to advance toward their visitor. Thanks be to Jehovah, breathed the prophet. He hath stopped the mouth of lions, these fierce beasts, that they will do me no harm. He sat down on the floor of the den and leaned his back against the wall to make himself comfortable for the night. Soon, two cub lions moved in his direction, not stealthily or crouching as though to make an attack, but in obvious friendliness. One lay on each side of Daniel as though to give him warmth and protection in the chilly dungeon. Presently their mother, an old lioness, crept over and lay in front of the prophet. He gently stroked their backs as they each turned their heads and licked his hand. Enclosed by the lioness and her cubs, the head of the patriarch was gradually pillowed on the back of one of the cubs as the four slept soundly in perfect peace and tranquility. I got to believe it was probably like that. Doesn't it say that in the millennial kingdom, the lion will lay down with the lamb? The child will play next to the hole of the cobra? I think Daniel got a little foretaste there of kingdom life. He was delivered because of his faith in God. You know, God may take us through persecution and deliver us through it, or he may take us into that situation and deliver us home to glory. Either one is a good outcome. I just like the thought of the Lord taking care of Daniel that way. Well, what's the outcome? Look at verse 25. Then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, the nations, and men of every language who were living in the land, "May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and enduring forever. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and he rescues and he performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of lions." You know, somebody asked this. Why does God let bad things happen to good people? Why do two innocent men go to prison for several years for a crime neither committed? Why does a child drown in the fish pond at his grandmother's house? Why does the person who gives the most to his church and the charities lose his business? Why does the mother of three small children get cancer? Those are the real questions asked by people we know. Look at our friend Daniel. Why should he be the one thrown to the lions? Is he the hero of the story? Isn't he? Actually, he's just one of the supporting actors in a great drama. The real hero of the story is God himself. God gets the glory. And in the end, well, listen to what this writer said. The real focus of the story is on God. He took the lion's den and used it for his own glory and for his own purpose. And when the story was all over and written, the purpose of those difficulties was to glorify God. At the beginning of the sixth chapter of Daniel, we had a new regime. At the end of the chapter, there is a new religion. All by the decree of a king who was touched by the power of Almighty God. So, we discover that God uses our suffering, our persecution, for his glory. And he brings good out of it. The issue is not us. The issue is the attention that it brings to him and the people that it draws to the Savior. But look at this outcome for Daniel, verse 28. So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. He maintained his integrity and God blessed him. Read a story about a couple of Duke University sophomores who were taking a course in organic chemistry. And up to this point in time, they had all A's going into their final exam. And they were pretty confident about their final exam, so instead of staying home to study for the weekend, they thought they'd go over to the University of Virginia and meet some friends over there and do a little partying with the friends. Well, they got over there partying, and they drank a little too much, and they didn't get up Sunday to drive like they should have, and so they ended up getting back to Duke University on Monday morning, the day of the exam. Well, they didn't want to take the exam without studying, so they went to their professor and they said, look, we were over at the University of Virginia this weekend visiting some friends, and we were trying to get home on time, but we had a flat tire. And we didn't have a spare, and we just ran into all kinds of trouble getting somebody to tow us so we could finally buy a tire and get a new tire on. Professor thought about it for a while, and he said, okay. He said, well, you guys can come and take your final exam tomorrow morning. They said, oh, great. So they studied all night. They showed up the next day to take their final exam. Professor put one of the students in this room over here, put another student in that room over there, gave him the test booklet, and he said, okay, man, have at it. They opened up the test. They looked at the first question. It was a simple question on free radical formation, and so it was worth 5 points. And they thought, oh, this is going to be great. They turned the next page, and all that was left on that very next page was a simple question. It said, this is worth 95 points. Which tire? If you have integrity, God will keep you and protect you and bless you. If you don't have integrity, chances are you're heading for trouble. You will be a useful servant all the days of your life if you have integrity. How do you get integrity? It's not that difficult. Determine to obey the Lord in all things. Spend time with the Lord every day. And when you get into difficult circumstances, trust His character and His promises and make your decisions on that basis. God will strengthen you and see you through. Amen? Okay. We're going to pray in a minute but sing, but Clint is going to make an announcement here about procedure for our annual business meeting and also what to do with the children.